Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
So in 2004, The Guardian asked Siddhartha Deb to write about call centers in India. He went undercover to do the piece, worked at a call center, and that experience led him to write his new book called The Beautiful and the Damned, a portrait of the new India. Siddhartha Deb also teaches creative writing at the New School and has an event tonight at 6 at the Barnes & Noble in Tribeca on Warren Street related to this book. Welcome to WNYC.
Thank you for inviting me.
How did this come about?
The book, the biggest assignment go to the India at the time when, you know, everything was booming, the global economy was kind of expanding. And I think there was some worry in the West, both in the States and in Britain, about these jobs being offshore. And The Guardian wanted me to get in there and get a job because it is hard to get journalistic access. So I went back to Delhi. I created a resume. And I grew up in a very, very small town in India, very far from Delhi, about a couple of thousand miles, really. And I created this persona who was a kind of school teacher. And I ended up getting a job working in Noida, taking calls from very angry British customers.
Literarily inclined will know that The Beautiful and the Damned is an F. Scott Fitzgerald reference. So is your first chapter title, The Great Gatsby. What does F. Scott Fitzgerald have to do with the new India?
Well, I think that idea of a sort of a gilded age and is what I was interested in getting at. And both, in some sense, the flamboyance, which seems to be very attractive or has been very attractive to the West, especially the flamboyance of the new rich, of the emerging middle classes, the sort of the opulence, the wealth, that reminded me a little bit of the Gilded Age. But also the fact that on the other side of that, there was this picture, this sort of almost invisible picture of really the majority of people struggling and suffering quite immensely. And that's why it started off as a kind of metaphor. And I went back after The Guardian to work on the book, looking for a Gatsby-like figure. And I found him, and I wrote it. And this chapter actually does not appear in the Indian edition.
Because this gentleman, Arindam Chaudhary, a successful media and management tycoon, has filed a defamation suit against you, I presume in India.
In a very, very small court in India, very far from Delhi again. Although I believe the Supreme Court has just asked whether, you know, why they shouldn't be moved to Delhi. But the book appears in India without the chapter.
Are you going to get in trouble in that lawsuit if you tell us who this guy is and why you wrote about him?
Oh, I think I'll take that chance because, you know, I mean, the idea of writing a book like this is to discuss some of these larger issues, complicated issues. It's not about trying to get everybody to agree with me. But I certainly felt that the talk for the last 5, 6, 7 years has been about how wonderful all the changes in India have been. Yes, there are more shopping malls, more coffee. There are, you know, good coffee, all of which is, I'm sure, very nice. And there's been a kind of growing middle class, wealthy. But I wanted to talk about these other things. And I wanted to talk about not just the poor and the middle class, but I wanted to talk about the middle class and the rich with some kind of nuance. So when I'm writing about, say, someone like Arindam Chaudhary, I try to do a fairly nuanced portrait as a kind of, sympathetic to him, and actually in parts.
And Chaudhary, as I understand it, is a management guru who sells self-help business books, titles like Count Your Chickens Before They Hatch, Discover the Diamond in You.
Yes.
He's the Dr. Phil of India or something like that,
yes.
I guess.
Yes.
And you write that his fortune ultimately was built on the aspiration and resentment of the Indian middle class.
Yes.
Certainly parallels to America.
But, absolutely.
But what is that resentment?
Oh, the resentment is partly, it's become sharper now recently. I think there's this whole idea among the middle class that, we're going to catch up with the West. And for a while now, for about a decade or so, they've been feeling, yes, we've been catching up with the West. I think it has soured a little bit. In some sense, in recent years, in some sense, what's happened is that in India, the global financial crisis has affected India as well. Things have, you know, the latest economic sort of the GDP, the growth that for the last quarter is less than it was before. Things like car sales are down. Things like, apartment sales are down. There's less credit. And people are uneasy about this because in the upper layers, both the rich and the middle class, they've completely bought into this idea that a kind of untrammeled capitalism is wonderful. And they're not prepared to accept that things are actually quite difficult, including in America. You will not read much about the difficulties that people are facing here over there. And I think the resentment
is... And people here are deathly afraid of India, not quite as afraid as we are of China.
China, right.
But we're deathly afraid of a country where, as you document, 800 million people earn $2 a day or less.
Yes. But why are you afraid?
Why?
Yes.
Why are Americans afraid?
Yes.
Americans afraid because they see India on the rise and America on the decline and a lot of smart, well-educated people coming out of India willing to work harder than Americans, take tech jobs for less money than Americans, and therefore with brighter futures.
In the short term, perhaps. I mean, that's certainly a legitimate, reasonable fear. And, you know, I kind of end up being sympathetic to both sides. I'm sympathetic to the people here who are afraid of losing their jobs. And I am sympathetic, in some sense, to the ambitions of the people willing to work hard. But essentially, I think what's happening more and more is that this idea that, you know, you can have limitless growth, whether it's in India or whether it's in America, that's been challenged. That's been challenged by certainly by the global financial crisis. It's been challenged by other things like, say, climate change, which is, again, in India, people, and again, we're talking about people at the top, the rich, the powerful, the middle classes. They're not willing to talk about these things. They're not willing to talk about environment. They really seem to think building more parking lots and shopping malls is the way to go.
Siddhartha Deb, author of The Beautiful and the Damned, A Portrait of the New India. And I want to make sure we get in this discussion to what is arguably the biggest piece of news coming out of India now related to this, which is the corruption scandal and the anti-corruption movement led by Anna Hazare, who fasted for 12 days as part of a well-publicized protest. So given the themes of your book and the inequalities in the new India, does it surprise you that corruption of all things is the focus of the world's attention at the moment on this country?
Yes and no. I'll explain why. In a way, it's very interesting because the first character I write about, the rich man, Arindam Chaudhary, can be seen actually giving a talk in front of Anna Hazare's fast about, you know, he says, you know, something like, this has woken up the revolutionary in me. Now, I'm somewhat suspicious when a lot of the rich and the powerful are the people sort of pushing this movement about corruption. And they're both good and bad things to be said about that movement. But basically, it focuses incredibly on the government and on the politicians, on the parliament. And that I am critical of. I'm not denying the fact that the government and the parliament and politicians are actually very corrupt. But they don't want to talk about big business, which is also part of the corruption. They don't want to talk about media houses, which are also part of this corruption. In fact, last year, we've seen a number of scams that have broken out, which have implicated everybody, government, business, parliament, media. But the middle class just wants to talk about the state. And they are very critical of the idea of the parliament. And I am critical of that because these are representatives of people. They are elected.
Well, in your chapter titled Red Sorghum, Farmers in the Free Market, you're critical of some of the corruption in the private sector. You write about seed dealers with ties to politicians who eventually manipulate crop prices and hurt farmers. So that's an example of what you're saying.
Perfectly.
And Anna Hazare, for all the publicity she's getting, the new Gandhi, nearly 200,000 farmers committed suicide in different parts of India in the decade from 1995 to 2005, according to your book.
Yeah.
That's a shocking statistic.
It is, and it's in the very years that the urban economy was booming. And there is this sort of increasing, I mean, some of the anger that we see in sort of the movement, the people who've gathered behind Anna Hazare, the middle class, they're really tired of these farmers, these peasants, these poor working laborers. And that's the vast majority of the country, the semi-literate, the non-English speaking. And some of that impatience comes out in this attacks against parliament or politicians and the government. But I think what will happen is that the Anna Hazare movement itself has been absorbed. The government is quite clever. Parliament is quite clever. And it is corrupt. I mean, the thing is that the middle class, me, and I put myself as a part of it, we participated in that corruption. And that's a level of reflection that the elites or the middle classes are not willing to make.
We just have a minute left. What's your own background in relation to this? I know you're a longtime New Yorker, right?
I've been here for 13 years, yes. I teach creative writing at the undergraduate Eugene Lang College in New School. But yeah, I had to make a very long journey within India from the borders to Calcutta to Delhi, and then I came here.
Where did you grow up? What was your background?
I grew up in Shillong. My grandfather was an illiterate peasant in what is today Bangladesh. My father was a refugee from the partition of 1947, the first person to go to school. He was a minor civil servant, a very honest civil servant. And I'm actually a product of the Indian state in some sense.
So do you wind up, despite all the, you know, startling things that you point out in the book and all the problems, do you wind up with an optimism about India?
Not if it refuses to address inequality, whether that's of class, gender, caste. These are questions that it's absolutely got to have.
Siddhartha Deb, his new book is The Beautiful and the Damned, A Portrait of the New India. He has an event tonight at 6 p.m. at the Barnes & Noble in Tribeca on Warren Street. Fascinating conversation. Thank you so much for having it with us.
Thank you so much for inviting me.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC.